south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right. Back to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, a voice for the oppressed and downtrodden, otherwise known as expat gonna-bes and wannabes. Yep, this show is mostly for all you expat gonna-bes and wannabes. I'm talking about unwoke people now, still hanging on, sadly stuck up in the United States of toxicity. Yep, that's right. This is the show for people dying to get out of Dodge who just haven't made the move yet for whatever reason. Oh, and by the way, sorry about the bad audio with the last show. That happens when I'm out and away from my regular computer setup. I end up using portable gear that's just not as good as the stuff I have in the regular studio. You can tell, I know. But it's light and compact, and I can haul it anywhere. Now, about today's show. The question is, should I get annoying and horrible right off the bat, or just ease into it today? All right. Start out with this email from Claire. She says, Johnny, you're right about how the public is purposely misled with constant fake news about Bitcoin and cryptos. How we keep hearing over and over that Bitcoin and cryptos are huge energy hogs and are environmentally damaging. Not that I have any cryptos yet, Johnny, but I've done my homework because with my government job, I have almost unlimited time on my hands. I do practically nothing now. And sadly, it's totally acceptable. No one seems to care. I just sit around at work, not because I'm lazy. It's just that I'm a public librarian. And since schools have been shut down for about a year and a half now, almost no one comes into the library anymore. Even before COVID, though, smartphones and Google turned libraries and a lot of other public buildings into virtual mausoleums. However, the libraries are still all open for business, the public ones anyway, though we get very little traffic, dead in the water. Though, we still rack up heavy utility bills, even when no one's in the building. Nobody ever reports on this, but public libraries and government buildings in general are such energy hogs, they make Bitcoin and cryptos seem like firecrackers next to an atomic bomb. I doubt, Johnny, you've ever heard people talk about this before. And when I mention it to friends and family at get-togethers, their eyes just glaze over, so I just quit bringing it up. You know how when you meet people, they say, how's it going? How's work? They're just being polite. They really don't want to know, but I give them an earful when they ask. So, Johnny, are you ready for an earful? Because here it comes. Last week, my supervisor at the library informed all of us workers that by October 1st, we had to be fully vaccinated to enter the premises. Though anyone else could walk in and check out a book or hang out, no such restrictions applied to them for the time being. Even though, as mentioned, libraries are virtual mausoleums these days. Almost no activity except when a teacher brings in a class of students by force. Most kids would much rather be glued to their smartphones. It seems no kids these days want to be stuck in a stodgy old library. And I'm talking about the good old days pre-COVID. At least back then, we'd get our share of seniors who grew up with a library tradition. Though now, since COVID, seniors are all panicked about going outside, so we lost that crowd too. Most of them anyway. So the bad news is I gotta get vexed. Or quit. But the internet cafe bookstore down the lane with absolutely wall-to-wall clients, especially in the early mornings and lunchtime, have no such vax mandates. Here at my public library, I could blast a shotgun down the card catalog main aisle and never hit a human being. Maybe a mouse, because this is a creaky old Depression-era building with many hidden cubbyholes where countless generations of rodents have been born and raised. My point, Johnny, the building was built by the WPA in the 30s, and they say Bitcoin is an energy hog. Lucky no efficiency experts will ever see the heating or AC bills. But no one would care anyway. As long as government pays the bill, no one gives a rip. I happened to see last November's heating and electric bill was $6,000 and change, and that was just 1 month. And to think, the U.S. has some 3,000 of these concrete Depression-era monstrosities, one in every city and town and borough. And there's the other 8,000 plus Depression era high schools and junior highs, courthouses, and municipal buildings too. Most of them 5 times the size of my library. 5 times the energy hogs, and none of them have any kind of decent fiberglass modern insulation. Some still don't even have basic double pane windows. In the main reading areas, yes, but in the private rooms in the basement and the top floors, single pane windows condense and sweat with the summer air conditioning and ice up in the winter. Ironically, according to the media, it's Bitcoin and cryptos that are the energy hogs. And how about the fact that I must get vaxxed to go to a job where I barely interact with humans anymore? Well, Johnny, I'm in deep discussions with my husband now. I want to move to Latin America, and he doesn't. But he's not the one who's under the gun to get vaxxed either. What am I to do? Signed, Claire, a very sad 50-something librarian in Georgia. P.S. Not that I have any cryptocurrencies yet. But with all the time I've had on my hands at the biblioteca, in an effort not to get glued to my smartphone, or find a corner and just take a lot of naps like other unnamed library workers have urged me to do, in my free time, and there's plenty of it, I've been studying up on Spanish and cryptocurrencies and blockchains. When I feel ready to pull the trigger and actually buy a hard wallet and get some cryptos, I'd like to get in touch with Captain Mangle and his crypto course. Claire, it's Mango, M-A-N-G-O, not Mangle, M-A-N-G-E-L. Mangle, Captain Mangle. It could work. By the way, for all of you who've met Captain Mango, you should ask him how he got that name. I was there when it happened. Anyway, Claire says, I've found no matter how many crypto YouTubes I watch, there's no substitute for bantering back and forth with a real live human being. And you get none of that with any of the other online crypto courses. What most of us newbies need is some real hand-holding. Okay, Claire, thanks for that. And I have to say, you're stuck in one of those dilemmas I see all the time. One person in a pair or partnership does want to come to Latin America in a big way. Want to get the hell out of Dodge, get that plan B going. And the other one, not necessarily against it, but just needs to be convinced. However, over the years, I've found there are only 2 ways to convince a person. One is they have to have some major trauma up in the States, like you have right now, Claire, being forced to take a vax or get fired or retire. Something like that will tend to wake up a person in a hurry. And I'm not talking about today's twisted version of the word woke or wake. Funny how today's version of the word woke means exactly the opposite of the traditional age-old dictionary definition. Man, how'd the world get so screwed up? I mean, the first world, of course. As far as the third world, it's always been screwed up, but in different ways. Ways us squingles and expats can handle. But I digress. Where were we? Oh, yeah. Talking about ways to get your uninitiated or unmotivated partner to go along with a plan B. The second best way to get a person on board is to get them down here off the gringo tourist trail for a week or two. But it's got to be off the gringo tourist trail. And they've got to get quality boots on the ground. In other words, they've got to get the appropriate hand-holding done by a person who's well-connected. Someone with great context who could help make the transition easy and painless. Every expat gonna be and wanna be needs a person to help them smooth out the bumps. Because it won't be smooth sailing if you try to do it all yourself. Believe me, I hear stories all the time of people coming down on their own, getting boots on the ground, even making a couple of trips down, but not really setting themselves up with a network. And then what happens is they come on down, try to set up shop and live here, and suddenly from day one, they've got dozens of questions on their minds and no one to ask except Google search. Or sometimes worse yet, they'll get on those notorious expat Facebook groups. You know, there are websites and Facebook sites just loaded with gringos and expats living on the gringo tourist trail. Problem is, most of them don't know a lick of Spanish and they don't blend in at all with the locals. They're living in a kind of synthetic gringo island world, thus are not really much connected with the right people at all. But those expat Facebook sites aren't completely useless. Since gringos are always moving and selling their stuff, they can be great places to find good deals on refrigerators, cars, bikes, smartphones, microwave ovens, even gold and silver coins and bullion. So, by all means, if you're a gonna-be or wanna-be living up in the States, and you're about to pull the trigger on a plan B, do check out those expat fakebook sites. If you're thinking about shipping a bunch of stuff down, you'll find it's usually not necessary. You might be surprised to find gringos are selling everything you want to ship down, used but often in very good condition. So you can avoid that hassle. Hey, and believe me, I understand the problems of living up in the States right now if you're a gringo wannabe or gonna be. You know the clock's ticking on your ability to get the hell out of Dodge. Your options are starting to get limited. The doors are closing. The problem is most of today's gonna-bes and wannabes are procrastinators, often because they've got tons of baggage. Kids, dependent parents and grannies, real estate to sell, debts, and the biggest procrastination excuse of all, that long or short wait for Social Security or a pension to kick in. Everyone thinks they can hold out 1, 2, 3, 5, or 10 years till that retirement bonus kicks in. Oh, really? Are your eyes and ears not working right? What you really should be concentrating on is getting some quality boots on the ground. Make a couple of week or 2 week long or even month trips down. Get that network going. Meet some people. Make some useful friends and get your foot in the door. The thing is, if you're a gonna-be or wanna-be, if you're not fluent in Spanish, you're going to need a network. And if you think you're going to do it yourself, you can come on down, but you're going to spin your wheels and you're going to drop $5,000 or $10,000 more than you had to. You're going to make a lot of mistakes, costly mistakes. I did. I knew no one when I came here to Latin America. I had some contacts to look up, but in the end, they weren't that much help. Yep, that's right. I admit, the first 5 years I was down here, I spun my wheels. I made tons of mistakes. Yeah, I guess that's why a lot of you are listening to this show. You want to hear about my errors so you don't make them, right? Good move. I wish I'd have had someone to listen to like me some 30 years ago. But getting back to the point, there are so many gonna-bes and wannabes that are itching to come down here, especially with the COVIDiot crisis and the Big Brother hammer coming down heavy. The problem is, again, if you've got a significant other who doesn't feel like coming down, in other words, they don't mind going down with the Titanic, or they're just not quick enough to realize it. The only way to get them on board, and that might not work either, is to get some really quality boots on the ground here. The key is quality boots on the ground. A trip to Tulum, Cancun, or Costa Rica won't cut it. I'm sorry. You longtime listeners have heard me tell the tale that I lived in Costa Rica for 3 years. That was my first stop. And I learned basically zero Spanish. My street Spanish did not start kicking in till after about 5 years being down here, including that 3 useless years in Costa Rica. Thank God I got out of there. But then, just 2 years off the Gringo Tourist Trail, my Spanish kicked in nicely. Well, maybe not that nicely, but good enough. Well, that's kind of my observation for language dunces like myself. If you choose a place that's populated with gringos, you're never going to learn your Spanish. I know gringos and expats who've lived in gringoized places. Tulum, Playa del Carmen, Costa Rica, and many, many places in Mexico. Think of it, living in a Latin country for 20 or 30 years and not knowing much Spanish at all. Though I guarantee if you live off the Gringo Tourist Trail for 2 years, no matter how bad a Spanish dunce you are, you will learn some Spanish. Though, of course, you know the number one way to learn your Spanish in a hurry, in just 2 to 3 months, is to have a Latin boyfriend or girlfriend. But they cannot be English speakers. That won't work. Take it from me. If you have a Latino or Latina significant other who can speak English, they'll default to that every time. You'll never learn your Spanish. Even if you make it the rule they must speak to you in Spanish at all times, they'll still default to English whenever there's a communication breakdown, which will come multiple times a day. That's for sure. Which brings us to a rather long email from Madeline, but very much worth going over because there are lots of little points of interest. So, here it goes. She says, "Hi, Johnny. My husband just came to the realization that traveling to Mexico or elsewhere in Latin America may be the only way we can afford the extensive dental work that he needs." She says, "I know you mentioned that you have information available on Latin American medical clinics. Would this also include dental clinics? We are mostly interested in Mexico or hopefully Guatemala clinics. But however you have this information organized, I would really appreciate it if you could send it to me." All right, let's stop for a second and hit on that. You know, Madeline, I put together a 100-page Latin American healthcare report. Go to expatplanb.com and pick it up. It explains the good, bad, the ugly, and the do's and don'ts of coming down to Latin America for medical or dental treatment. Yes, it's true, there are many, many first-rate dental and medical clinics and first-rate dentists and MDs, too, many of them trained in the U.S. But the problem is most gringos and expats who come down looking for quality work at a very cheap price, they have no idea how to qualify the clinics or docs. Almost always, it's word of mouth, or they go for the duck that has the glitziest, most first-world-like English website. That can be a big mistake. It's usually an unspoken rule that the more English you see on those ads and websites, the more you're going to pay, the more gringo pricing. That's why I always recommend first go to expatplanb.com and get my healthcare report, because it tells you exactly how to find a highly qualified MD or dentist. Otherwise, it's like throwing a dart at the newspaper classified ads. That is, if you're old enough to remember, classified ads used to be printed on paper. And as for my report, it doesn't list specific clinics, dentists, or MDs. Amongst other things, it talks a lot about the levels of quality and how you can sort it all out. That report shows you how to do it even if your Spanish sucks. What most people don't know is that any dentist or MD who's about 50 years old or younger than that can speak English. It's been a requirement for some years now in Latin American medical and dental schools. After all, the vast majority of cutting-edge medical and dental research is first published in English, not to mention all the modern medical equipment and the newest technologies are mostly designed, patented, and produced in English-speaking countries. That means the only way an MD or dentist can be up on the cutting-edge technology is to be able to read it in English. Sure, it's true, eventually it all comes out in Spanish medical literature too, but that could take 6 months to a year, even more. And in medicine, especially these days, things move at a very rapid pace. To keep up, you have to speak English. So, in a way that's a qualifier, I'd be leery of MDs and dentists who don't speak or read English. Though I've also noticed many Latinos in all the professions often downplay their knowledge of English. And when you say, ¿habla inglés, doc? Do you speak English? They'll often say, just a little bit, un poco. But usually they're being very modest. They're underplaying it. I also find when gringos and expats are asked the same questions about their Spanish, ¿habla español? Do you speak Spanish? Americans will often overplay it. They'll exaggerate. It's the gringo way, I guess. Although, oddly enough, I find Europeans in Latin America, when asked the same questions, are not prone to exaggeration, not like American gringos are. Oh, well, so remember that when a Latino says he speaks English, un poco, a little, that usually means their English is a lot better than your Spanish. But I digress as usual. Where were we? Oh, yeah, Madeline's email. So, Maddie, if you're asking me to point out specific clinics, MDs, and dentists, I don't usually do that. What I generally do is hook people up with my overqualified seminar logistics coordinator, Rita, whose father is a well-known Guatemalan surgeon. So she's well-connected with anything medical or dental. And she'll also connect you with and make appointments for you with my number one dental pick, a guy who went to dental school in the USA and was asked to stay and run a department there at the dental school. They wanted him to stay and not return to Guatemala. They offered him a position. He said no because he wanted to be with his wife and family and kids in Guatemala City. Man, I'll tell you, when you walk into his office, it looks like you're walking into a high-class, high-tech U.S. dental office. And if it wasn't for the fact the receptionist is speaking Spanish, she wouldn't know you were in Latin America. Though, you might think you're in my jammy. Speaking of my jammy, you want to know one of the top reasons every single Latin American I meet would love to live, visit, or buy property in my jammy? That's because it's so close to the United States. But we were talking about my favorite recommended Latin American dentist. Another advantage is that his office is right on the Pan American Highway. By the way, I don't make anything or get a commission or a kickback for recommending any of the people I talk about. For example, Captain Mangle or my overqualified seminar logistics lady, Rita. They're just good people. And as for Rita, I highly recommend her for any kind of boots on the ground hand-holding, including apartment and real estate hunting, bank accounts, utility hookups, internet connections, etc. Anyway, people who know me will vouch for the fact that I don't make anything, get a kickback or break, or recommending any of the people I mention on this show. But let's get back to Maddie's email. She says, Johnny, the fact that my husband needs dental work may be a breakthrough for us. Originally, my husband was adamant that we would not move out of the country, but I've been talking it up and lately he has at least speculated about what it would be like. He talked to a couple of friends who have lived in Guatemala, for example. Apparently, one got stuck at his second home in Antigua for an extended period right after the pandemic was declared. This guy was concerned about the poverty he was seeing resulting from all this, and that it might make living there unsafe for expats as people become more desperate. Do you have any thoughts about this? Yes, Madeline, I do. You know, I've been down here 30-plus years now, and guess what? Extreme poverty has always existed in Latin America. And they don't riot in the streets or rush into other people's neighborhoods and loot and pillage. I've never known gringos to be at risk. The majority of Latinos are so very used to doing with so little. Besides the fact their bills are very low. They've got no eating and air conditioning bills. Not to mention they've got four growing seasons. You have to come on down, take a look, drive around, and you'll see that most Latinos, even really poor ones, especially the ones out in the boonies, have lemons and mango and avocado trees on their property, driveway chickens running around. Latinos know how to live, survive, even prosper under conditions where Americans wouldn't last a month. In reality, the only Americans who ask questions like that, the ones you're concerned about, like, for example, are Latinos going to get so desperate they'll start looting and pillaging and coming after the so-called rich gringos? Well, I find anyway that gringos who are worried about that are generally people who've never been down here for any length of time. And if they have, they don't mingle at all with the locals. They keep their distance, hang with the gringos and expats. Oh, and Madeline, if you've noticed, the real desperate Latinos join up with those caravans to get their piece of Joe Biden's American dream. Oh, and isn't it funny, the really desperate ones that are always sneaking into the States, they somehow come up with the $5,000 to $10,000 necessary to pay the coyotes to get safe passage. Meanwhile, the average American family, it's been reported over and over again, cannot scrape together $500 cash for any kind of emergency. There's something wrong with that math, isn't there? Maybe it's BLM or woke math. You know, where 2 plus 2 doesn't equal 4. I guess I'm hopelessly old school. Kind of stuck on traditional math and science, you know, that was developed by toxic white privileged males. But I digress as usual. Anyway, then Madeline says in her email, "Johnny, I'm getting my hopes up that I can persuade my hubby to get on board with a plan B. I'm interested in what one of my husband's friends describes as the expat bubble around Lake Atitlan in Guatemala, often described as the most beautiful lake in the world. Though, Johnny, I thought we could stick it out up here in the States, but now every day I feel more deeply disturbed about the maniacs in this country becoming more belligerent against those of us refusing to get the vax. I don't know how far they're going to take things, but I would really like to get somewhere low-tech and hands-off, where I could possibly buy or fake my way out of getting a jab if they become mandatory. Johnny, you at one point mentioned Guatemalans only have a 2% COVID vaccination rate. Maddie, you're off there. It's 4%. Anyway, she says, but you more recently mentioned that almost all Latin Americans actually want to be jabbed. I wonder how that will play out down there. Obviously, the megalomaniacs who are attempting to control the entire human race want everyone to get this genetic modification procedure and are tightening the screws on every government in the world. Though, I've been thinking, maybe if you are in an area where most people will just line up for it, maybe those SOBs won't wind up going door to door to inject people as the current regime has hinted at doing here in the States. As for here in my state, we're told 75% of the people have done this to themselves. Almost everyone we know has been vaxxed. My husband had a 40-year-old acquaintance who had an 18-month-old baby. She dropped dead of a heart attack 2 weeks ago. And we are friends with an older couple who have both rapidly gone senile. And there are others whose mental state we are starting to wonder about. They've all had the vax. A dear friend was just left diagnosed with thrombophlebitis. Several friends just got diagnosed with cancer and died quickly, and or are battling it now. A friend's brother just had a heart attack and a series of strokes and is currently in critical care. All have been vaxxed. My elderly uncle died a couple of days after getting injected last December. In every case, all the people around them are making no connection to this ghastly experimental procedure. But they all took it anyway. Seriously, it's like living in a nightmare or a horror movie. Of course, it's not everybody, but maybe thinking these are not coincidences makes it seem like I'm the one who's crazy. I also see what's happening to people getting put into retirement institutions here. Looks like murder to me when so many patients die after these shots. Shots, by the way, which all retirement homes now require. I was really struck, though, Johnny, by your observation that people in Latin America don't put their elderly in retirement homes, and that in-home nursing care is quite affordable. To me, that would be so much more preferable to what we have to look forward to here in the States. Not just for us, but for my son, who has a degenerative neurological disorder. I could never put him in one of those places. Okay, Johnny, that's enough. I'll stop going on about it. My own situation has many complexities. I would need to discuss all that in a personal consult if we get that far. Anyway, I sure would appreciate any info you could send me about where to get dental work done. I'm hoping that will help motivate my husband to make the right decision before it's too late. With much gratitude, thanks, Madeline. All right, thanks for that, Madeline. I should mention that many gringos and expats have come down to Guatemala specifically to get dental treatments, some of them with very extensive procedures. And so naturally they had to stay down here for a week or two or three. Not a problem, though, because Rita usually makes all those arrangements. Once again, if you come down here and try to do it all by yourself, you can do it, but then most likely you'll get stuck in your hotel room for a week or two or three, however long it takes. And you really want to make the best possible use of your time down here regarding boots on the ground and having a good look at all the things you really need to see. So again, it's not to say you couldn't contact the dentist and do it all yourself. But then how are you going to make the best use of your time, especially if you don't speak Spanish? The only way to do it is to have someone hold your hand through it, not just a tour agency either. Oh, and by the way, no matter what procedures you get done, they're going to be around a fifth of the price of that kind of dental work up in the States. So just imagine, and this case just came up about maybe 2 or 3 months ago, a gringo up in the States was quoted $20,000+ for some implants he needed to have done. He came down here to Latin America, cost slightly more than $3,000. He ended up down here for about a month. The total cost of his trip, not including the dental work, I believe it was around $2,500, including airfare. He ended up staying in a little hotel in Antigua, Guatemala, about an hour away from the dentist's office. Booked it for a month, and I think it broke down to around $45 a night. There's lots to do in Antigua, so it was a good plan. He went to his dental appointments in the city, there were about six of them, by shuttle bus. By the way, there's a shuttle 3 or 4 times a day for $12. It goes directly from Antigua to the airport and then to Guatemala City. By the way, it was his first time to Guatemala. He'd been to Mexico and Costa Rica before, though never until this trip had he been off the gringo tourist trail. And in the end, he ended up falling in love with Antigua, Guatemala, and now is making plans to live there. But only because he was able to get in just the right amount of boots on the ground action and meet the right people, including our recommended lawyer. And now, with his little network established, he has the confidence to get the hell out of Dodge.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.